Today in D&D and Outdoors, we discussed North American model conservation. How does this impact you as a hunter, fisherman, and it helps wildlife? We also tell you how dumb an Oregon husband and wife is. Listen for more.
D&D Outdoors is brought to you by Headline Outdoors. Download Headline Outdoors on Roku or Amazon Fire TV today and watch Season 3, with new episodes airing every week. It is also brought to you by Southwestern Outdoorsman, currently running 15% off all Bison products with code BISON. Head on over to www.southwesternoutdoorsman.com and get yours today.
And welcome back, everyone, to D&D Outdoors. Today, we are finishing up our understanding of wildlife conservation with the North American model of wildlife conservation. But first, how are you doing today, Dustin?
I'm doing good, man. How about you?
I'm doing good. Can't complain. Summers, someone was saying the other week that just another day closer to deer season.
I might have.
I think that might have been you on our last podcast. I can't remember, but if not, I'll give you credit for the quotes.
I've seen the memes too that say that, so I'm not going to take credit.
All right, well, that works. Oh man, yeah, we are going to wrap up our last episode. We talked about the Pittman Robinson Act and the importance of that, so we figured we might as well add on here the North American model of wildlife conservation. Which is another key resource into playing in hunting, fishing, and really just overall what sportsmen play a part of in everyday life. It does have, which is the North American wildlife model. It's a set of like principles that has kind of guide wildlife management, conservation decisions in the United States and also Canada. But it really has helped define other conservation methods throughout the world and like Africa, bringing, species back from the brink of extinction. For example, like the American buffalo or American bison was one that was really positively impacted from this. There's seven tenets of the wildlife of the North American model. Those tenets are wildlife as a public trust resource. So that kind of just means that the fish and wildlife are held by the public. They aren't held by the government, even though the government likes to think they own everything. And it really just is our job, as we talk about, to be stewards of the land of here and to take care of our wildlife. The next one is kind of the elimination of markets for game. So that's like commercial hunting isn't sustainable. So I mean, we don't really anymore go out and really shoot, I guess, hundreds of animals at a time with one person to sell them off, which kind of feeds back into, it's a public, but we aren't like going out and killing a bunch of elk and then selling it off for meat.
A little careful how you say commercialize, because.
Yeah, you can't sell the meat that you harvest, probably the best way to put it. Yeah, not that the commercialization of hunting, it's the commercialization of the products received from hunting by selling that for market value. So like the meat, I don't even think you can sell hide anymore. I think that has to be farm raised. And only
I've seen ads talking about a certain fishing lure will buy squirrel tails.
That's interesting. Maybe there's different rules for that, or are they farm raised squirrels?
I mean, it was in the back of a hunt book. It said they'll buy, it was like $2 a squirrel tail or something like that.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. Yeah, I know, like, for example, you can sell antlers and sheds that are found on the ground, but you can't sell the antler or sheds that are harvested from an animal. Wow, squirrel tails for a fishing lure. Ah, right here it is. Let's see what it says. Beep! You need to don't you create
any names.
I will beep that out. we need them to create hand-tied dress hooks for our world-famous fish-catching lures. They tried hundreds. Interesting. Most folks send us squirrel tails, double their value by trading them for lures. Interesting. So 25 cents for a fully usable, 12 cents for a half usable. Whoa. Interesting.
Now you saying interesting because I was looking at a magazine?
Yeah, that you can read. No, I didn't even know that. What? You see, they even have t-shirts. All right, I'm going down a rabbit hole here. That is, that's very interesting. I wonder how they do that. I mean, maybe it's for big game. I mean, the Lacey Act of 1900 made it market hunting illegal in the United States, and also with the Migratory Bird Act. Are squirrels considered rodents? Is the question.
I mean, they call them tree rats, so.
Is that how they get around it? That's interesting. I've never heard of that. That's really cool that. I mean, I guess if you're a squirrel hunter, you can figure it out. As we said, we aren't going to say any names. I'm going to beep out the name. So when you heard that beep, that was just because Del said something stupid. And, yeah, you're not going to make a kill. And I mean, I don't know, 25 cents for a full tail. That's going to be four squirrels a dollar. Doing some math here. You're going to need a lot of squirrels.
I mean, that's not even covering the ammunition, really.
Yeah, you got to take out the ammunition, driving to the woods.
Your hunting license.
Your hunting license.
If you're leasing the property.
And you have to pay for shipping unless you send in 50 tail squirrels or more. And shipping. I feel like you're losing money here.
And not if you do you put a box, you put them in a box and you put their address as the sender and yours as the recipient, and don't put any postage on it and stick it in the mailbox.
Is that all it takes for me to send you stuff?
Not that I know anything about that. But.
Oh, Lord.
That was a joke. Never do that.
They might be like, return address being picked up here in Arizona, but it says it's returning in Virginia. Something's off here.
How did it get all the way out here?
Yeah. In this mailbox, that was the guy that was across the street. Oh, Lord. Yeah. As we say, we are not the legal advice experts here. So, you know, just do what you want with that tidbit of information. But we take zero responsibility for your decisions on this. Oh, Lord, that is great. The next, the third pillar is going to be allocation of wildlife by law. Wildlife is allocated to the public by law, as opposed to market principles and land ownership or other status. So that's interesting, you know, when they're talking about that, because I know out west, probably in the east too, the more land you have with the hunting area, the more that wildlife becomes yours. Because if you think of it, you got someone with 10,000 acres that only they can hunt because it's private property. They own that. They might not technically own that wildlife, but no one else is going to hunt unless they're paying a hefty trespass fee or they're in with some guide or know the person.
But then again, if you get caught poaching an animal, even if you own all that acreage, you're still paying for that animal.
No, I know. I agree with that, but I'm saying, like, during hunting season, for example, in like Colorado, there's people with tens of, or like thousands of acres, and the elk all go there because they know they aren't going to be shot at as much. But the person that pays that $6,000 to $10,000 trespass fee to hunt that land, the elk gives them an advantage, even though it says that the allocation of wildlife is for everybody, regardless of land ownership. It's interesting. This helps this democratic process and public input law to help ensure access to equitable laws regulating wildlife, including the 1940 Bald Eagle, Golden Eagle Act, the Endangered Species Act, for Marine Mammal Protection Act, and Endangered Species. I don't know. That's an interesting one. I think that's one that it's kind of like, it's more of a suggestion than a rule that's followed. Then we're going to that, you know, wildlife should only be killed for a legitimate purpose. I think everybody can agree with that, or mostly everybody. I don't know. I know that there was just an article posted about a Oregon couple that just decided to shoot down a bunch of elk. I mean, we talk about it all the time here, poachers getting caught for doing stupid stuff, poaching. But because of this app, part of this, you know, of the North American model really helps prevent poaching. I don't know. I know in Arizona, it's like 1-800 Operation Game Thief, where you can report poachers if they go to the game and fish. Do you have something like that out your way?
Yeah, they have a hotline. I'd have to look your number up. Most of the time, I just text the game warden. I have his number. So.
God, getting in too much trouble. You guys are on a first name basis.
I try to call him Officer and then his last name.
Yeah.
No, keep it, you know, respectful.
Yeah. No, yeah, I always see on the back of the game and fish trucks here, but I've never actually had to call it. I haven't caught anybody poaching. But so then again,
the couple that got caught, what were they doing? They were just killing the elk and leaving them?
So this is the craziest thing. Let me the couple, they had, it was a husband and wife. Actually, I wrote an article about this. And the husband and wife, Chris, I'll just read the article. Story time. Husband and wife Chris and Stephanie Lardy were convicted of multiple wildlife crimes, including elk poaching. The couple was convicted of firing 30 to 40 shots at an elk herd on Highway 394 in Oregon, according to the USA Today. Surprisingly, just take a guess. What do you think the surprise is going to be?
They only hit 5 elk.
They had a tag for 4 elk, but they decided to mow down the whole herd. They had 4 tags for the antlerless elk. They decided to shoot 2 calves, 2 cows, and a spike bull and leave them rotting.
See, that's where I have a problem. If you are if you are hungry to the point that you need that meat, it's wrong, but
there's a reason behind it.
I understand it. But if you're just going to shoot them and leave them rot, or the thing here is they'll shoot them and just go up and just cut the back straps out and just leave, or cut the head off. That is.
Yeah, I know. Here they just shot them off the side of the road and left them to rot, which, I mean, you have 4 elk tags. Like, 2 of them, what was it? What did I say? There was 2 calves, 2 cows. So all 4 of your tags are technically filled with that one. You just had to pack them up and not leave them rot. The only one would have been the spike bowl. People are just disgusting. The couple was sentenced to paying a $2,500 fines and restitutions, 6 days in jail, 18 months of probation. And here's the kicker. I think this is cool. I think that Game and Fish Department should do this across the country. He has to write an apology letter and publish it in the local newspaper. I think that's kind of a smart, like, hey, guess what? You're an idiot. You're going to let the whole town know you're an idiot. And even though your apology letter doesn't mean anything, everybody's going to know what you did.
I kind of feel like the fine and the jail time is not enough.
No. No, I don't think that is – I agree. They also lost their hunting licenses for 3 years, but they shouldn't be allowed to hunt again, in my opinion. But, yeah, jail. Well,
so let's see. Firing from a road, harvesting an animal without a license.
Wine and waste. Well, they had the license. They just didn't
– Well, not for that fifth one.
Yeah, not for the fifth one.
And so, then it, like you said, that hunter waste, so that's at least three right there.
Let's see, it's five. So they're roughly saying each elk they shot was worth $500 would be the price of those elk for a $2,500 restitution fine. Divide that by five. Yeah, I think they got off easy.
Yeah.
And you know, those type of people, in my opinion, I feel like they're going to probably go out and do it again. So that 3 years of whole no hunting thing, they'll be out there shooting something. You just don't go and mow down an elk herd. And especially they're taking two cows. You're taking, cows. They didn't say the gender of the calves, but if you're taking a whole bunch of generations away to make that elk herd flourish.
And you take the four elk home and you just call them and say, hey, I shot under, over, whatever it is, and I hit this one. I'd like to donate it to the food bank, Hunters for the Hungry, whatever deal they had there.
You report the bull. You take the other four that you had to tag for. Doesn't make sense. He had four tags and shot five elk. Four of those elk he shot.
Legally.
Were legal. Legally, I mean. They're illegal now, but they were legally able to be taken with you. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, people are crazy. And speaking about crazy people, it's just weird. I don't understand it. We will be right back from a true hunting company, Pro, that would not stand for this. Maybe they will turn them into some Pro seats, these people. Oh, Lord. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. People are idiots. Idiots. All right. So I keep because we start talking, then I get confused or I'm out in the process. I'm like, wait, I got to go and figure out what next one we're on. All right. Wildlife is considered an international resource. All right. Perfect. And as we said, while you're hunting out west, hunting in the trees, hunting in a blind, pretty much hunting anywhere, Perpro is going to take care of your knees and back. Have you seen that new knee pad they came out with that goes around the tree?
The saddle?
Yeah, that's really cool. I've looked at those saddle hunts, like what they are. I mean, I don't think they're really effective out west, unless you're like sitting on water, hopefully not the way I hunt.
You don't have any trees around, do you?
No, up north we do. Up north, we do where I was at this weekend. That's all forest. But where I hunt's not. It's all like the background right there. It's desert. Yeah. But
the way I was looking at it, it's you're pretty much taking away the platform you're standing on and you're just in that harness or saddle or whatever.
Yeah, you're kind of just floating. And I heard it's really tricky.
They claim that it's, if you're sitting there and it comes. An animal comes on the other side that you can actually move your body around the tree.
Yeah.
A better range, I guess, is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's my understanding of it. I don't know. Somehow I still feel I'd fall out of that damn thing. I'm not an acrobat. Reminds me of some circus stuff.
You just stick to those little frilly lace streams from a ceiling that you dance on.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think it would be cool. I've seen some of the demonstrations for that stuff, but I don't know. I don't saddle hunting. I mean, that just looks like a new challenge on top of the challenge of hunting as is. But I heard it is like what you said. It does give a better range and like makes you a little bit more stealthier. So you don't got a big old box sitting in the tree.
Yeah.
I mean, we'd love to hear from any of you saddle hunters out there. Let us know what you like about it. Wildlife. The next principle. We only got a few more left here. The wildlife conservation, or the North American model of wildlife conservation. Sorry, they're all about the same. wildlife is considered an international resource, which I agree. I agree that wildlife, you know, it really is international, especially in, I guess, North America, the North American model. Animals migrate from Mexico, Canada, Central America. I know, like in Arizona, we get jaguars that come across from Mexico and they travel through Central America. Bears, wolves up in the northern parts. What's that, Montana? and, you know, just the migration patterns. You know, you can't really, one country can't really claim wildlife. I mean, America, we can claim the bald eagle, but, you know, that's about it. I feel science is a proper tool for discharge of wildlife policy. I want to touch on that because this tenet draws from the writing of Aldo Leopold, who was called pretty much the father of wildlife conservation. He's a trained wildlife biologist. One of the fathers of forefront. We studied a bunch about him. If you know my background, my degree is in environmental science. Not to brag. but we studied a bunch about Aldo Leopold. I feel nowadays, which we've talked about, which just happened with the FSB, the Federal Subsistence Board up in Alaska, shutting down the Dall sheep hunting in Dall's Range, talking about the Washington bear management. Some of these wildlife boards, they don't take the science approach anymore. We've talked about it numerous times on this episode, that the government interferes, like this Pittman-Robinson Act that's going on, the Return Act, to get rid of the Pittman-Robinson Act. I think is a tenet that is overlooked the most probably here, at least in my opinion.
Can you dumb that down for people like me?
So essentially that the way we manage our wildlife should be up to science, not emotion. So your tree huggers shouldn't be telling us that we can't be hunting, and boards like the Game and Fish boards like they did in Washington shouldn't be outlawing bear hunting because it pisses a group of people off, because it's, even though it's bad for the environment and wildlife conservation. What happened in Alaska last week with the Federal Subsistence Board going against the Alaska Game and Fish recommendation, top biologists and scientists saying they should not shut down Dall sheep hunting in the Brooks Range, and which is like the coveted Dall sheep hunting in the world on federal land, and they did that. So they're saying you should let science manage the wildlife and your emotions should stay out of it.
If they can provide the data to go along with their assumptions.
Well, that's the problem. They can't.
That's fine. But
yeah. Well, that's the problem, is that they can't provide the data. As you know, I think it's been like 2 months since we were talking about the California bear ban and the California hunting bear ban that the Humane Society brought in. And because of that, the Humane Society kind of cut their own arm off, is California followed this and used the science and found out they had double the bears than they thought they had in the state. So they didn't ban the bears. So it really backfired on the Humane Society. Humane Society didn't know what. You're like, oh. Anyways, adopt your dog from any place but the Humane Society. Remember, they have like a 71% kill rate, as we talked about on our last episode.
Higher than mine.
Yeah. Adopt your dog any place but the Humane Society. That gives it back to them. Well, I guess I shouldn't say that, but they do save, I guess, 29% of the animals they get. and then the last one, democracy of hunting. This tenet was inspired by Theodore Roosevelt. It's the idea that open access to hunting will result in many benefits to society. This tenet supports access to firearms and the hunting industry, of which much funding for conservation is derived. Well, that really hits the nail on the head for a lot of different things. So, you know, talked about the Return Act. Well, it goes right into that. You know, get rid of the Return Act, get rid of the Pittman-Robinson Act. It's going to affect the North American model because there's not going to be money. Hey, Rick, you guys, I know that a lot of people these days think that, especially some people in a nice little house that's white on the East Coast, little bit north of Dustin, think that you can just pull money out of thin air. It doesn't work like that, unfortunately. Well, for things, I guess it does. For things that aren't related to like hunting and people actually going out and enjoying themselves. I see you thinking there. No comment.
Gonna keep it nice, and I'm not gonna say nothing.
Yeah, I'm not gonna say anything. Oh man. Yeah. I mean, that pretty much sums up the North American model. You know, as we said, North American model has been key in providing just hunting and wildlife, sound wildlife management throughout North America. It's just not like the United States coming up with this, even though we did come up with it, because everybody that came up with it is from the United States, but it's adopted throughout the country, throughout North America, through Canada. And it really has been an effective tool. If you, you know, if you really like hunting, I think you also have to be a conservationist. In the sense, you have to understand you kind of are having a broader impact on wildlife and management on its whole. So I think, you know, that was really the main point of Dustin and I doing this, was to really show the broader spectrum of what hunting is and fishing is. It's just not going out and watching the sunrise, freezing your butt off, watching the sunset, doing the walk of shame home because you didn't shoot anything.
I mean, even if the person does not like hunting or fishing, they ought to think about, you know, if they care about the wildlife, then they pretty much are a conservationist too, really, in my thought pattern.
Yeah.
And they should look at this and go to Howl for Wildlife and complain about this whole Pittman Robinson thing and them trying to do away with it.
Yeah. I go to Howl, fight the Return Act. It's pretty cool. Actually, just last week, I answered my call, my phone, surprise, surprise. And it was one of the senators from Arizona that I wrote through Howl saying, oh, we read your message and blah, blah. But your voices are heard when you use Howl. It's just not some bullcrap thing. Also, just educate people. Educate, you know, I have family members, co-workers that are non-hunters, and really talking to them about what hunting does and encourage them. And, you know, you don't have to buy a hunting and fishing license. Go find just donate to the Game and Fish Department to help conserve wildlife. Don't donate to like the Center of Biological Diversity or anything like that. Donate to, as much as I hate to say it, state agencies that are going to help fund the wildlife and really expand the conservation efforts of that wildlife and natural resources in your state. Because without that funding, you aren't going to see deer. Even if you don't hunt, you aren't going to just see, I mean, it all has a big effect on, you know, the deer go, the rodents go, you eventually won't see wildlife and just becomes kind of boring to look around at.
I mean, even if you don't hunt or fish, talk to somebody that does and maybe go fishing with them. Just go out one evening and sit with them and just see what the experience is all about. I mean,
be open to their way.
Hey, can you make me something so I can just taste it, sample it, whatever. Just
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, you know, you want the true organic. The only true organic is from hunting and fishing. There's no chemicals added to, I mean, there are somewhat, like, you never know what they're eating, but there's no actual chemicals added in nature. Nature balances itself out. And that's only found the true organic meat, elk, deer, fish, whatever you hunt. It's not what you buy in the store. That's not organic. So if you want organic and you truly want to, look into hunting and fishing.
I was actually talking to my sister the other night about that. She's turkey bacon and turkey burger and almond milk and this and that. And it's like, Tammy, if you want true organic protein meat, deer, I've got some here. I got wild boar here. I got wild boar sausage. I'll give you a pack and let you try it, Tammy. No, I don't want it. I don't want nothing wild game like that. It's like, you can't tell the difference between that pig and your store-bought pig. That pig does not have any of the hormones, any of the shots. Wildlife is stab-free, just like me.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you did take the stab, didn't you?
I have no comment on that. I was coerced by my company. Oh, man.
I thought it was your wife that made you do that.
No. She doesn't let me live that down. So.
There's the only way you can take her to Hawaii.
Yeah. Yeah, that was part of the, but yeah, that was part of the reasoning too behind it. But a lot of it had to do with the company of setting it. Like, you need to do this, and me being a little B word and giving in. So at least I admit to it. I'm not one of those people like, well, this and that. I'm like, no, man. They fooled me once. They aren't fooling me again, though. They haven't fooled me twice or three times, so, or four or five. But thank you guys very much for listening to D&D Outdoors. We're going to be coming back, as always. Our next episode will be the hunting preview. We'll be just diving into hunting West Coast, East Coast, every coast in between. And really just be ready for deer, elk, bear, dove, quail, duck, turkey, boar, pot roast season. Thank you guys. Remember, you can catch us on YouTube now if you want to see me and Dustin's beautiful face. If not, download us, give us 5 stars, give us thumbs up, whatever the podcast at Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Google. Find us on Instagram at D&D Outdoors and Facebook. And have a great rest of your day. If you're heading to work, it will be over soon. I'll tell you no matter.